Suddenly, I'm in a helicopter, my feet dangling over the strut. I realize, my God, I am in this right now. This is not a joke. This doesn't feel like a TV show. This feels like the real damn deal.
Remember, just walk off and lean back.
How am I leaning so far?
You're not leaning at all.
Stars Are on Stripes. That's a little bit of the piece from the promos for that TV show that opened last night. And when you hear it, I know a lot of people who, we cover a lot of veterans issues in the show. A lot of people who have been on this program have been in Iraq, have been in Afghanistan, have been in Vietnam. And we talk about that a lot, about what happens to our men and women who fought for this country, looking at suicide rates, which are just horrendous for veterans in America, no matter what war they've been in. And then TV shows like this come along, and it's our duty to kind of talk about this. And what do they really mean? I'll just say a little quick story, and I'll introduce our guest. When we took a bunch of vets and went back to Vietnam in 2005 to have American veterans kind of meet up with men and women who fought against them during the Vietnam War, we were taken to a place called Cu Chi. And Cu Chi was a place in the, during the Vietnam War where people called them the VC, the Viet Cong, or the National Liberation Front, lived underground, and they would pop up out of tunnels. And many Americans lost their lives there because they fell into spikes and they fell in these tunnels and men would pop up and get blown away by AK-47s. Well, they turned this place, Cu Chi, into like an amusement park in some senses. You can walk some of the trails that men men went through, but then they have these AK-47s. They have these AK-47s that you can pick up and shoot targets like tigers and whatever shark targets they have at the end of this trail. And I remember this one Australian kid was there, and he had picked up his gun, and he was wheeling it around. I grabbed him and the gun and moved him out of the way and said, "Man, do you know what that gun can do? Don't point that gun like that." You could. And so, you know, and one of the guys with us, Woody Curry, who runs a program here in Baltimore for addicted veterans from every war, a really successful program, who was a Vietnam vet, did his, was with the 25th, just got really depressed and walked away and said, "You know, if these guys knew what that AK-47 would do, they wouldn't play with it like it's a toy. They saw what it did to a man when a man is shot by one of those weapons." So, you know, when I first heard this, saw these promos during the Olympics, that was what hit me. I was going, what is this show? What are they doing? You know, and so here you have Scott Palin and all these other people running around pretending they're soldiers and, you know, Peekaboo Street and Leila Ali and others. And so I thought it deserved a discussion, just talk about what that show means and what's going on in our pop culture, what's happening with reality TV, and is this kind of war as a game? And now we're also seeing the military is busy now recruiting men and women who are video game addicts, really, to come and fight this new wars that we're fighting via drones. So let's talk about this intersection here, which is what we're going to do with the guest we have with us here in the studio now. We are joined here in studio by Dr. Rebecca Edelman, who's professor of media and communication studies at UMBC. Good to meet you, and welcome to the studio, Rebecca.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Mariam Monalisa Garavi is with us as well. She is a writer, poet, filmmaker, doctoral candidate in comparative lit and film and visual studies at Harvard University. And Monalisa, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mark.
David Wood is with us, senior military correspondent, who has won many awards for, and Pulitzer for his work covering our troops and more for the Huffington Post. And David, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here, so please join us with your thoughts. Maybe you saw the TV show last night. I saw clips of it. I just couldn't bear even watching the whole thing, so I didn't. You can, but I didn't have to see the whole thing to understand what was going on in that show. 410-319-8888. And I just get your take on where you think we are and what's happening here. And let me start with David Wood. You've been covering, you did a lot of time in Afghanistan and Iraq covering stuff with soldiers and stuff. And I'm just, your initial thoughts on this piece of Hollywood work?
Well, I think it's probably the most repugnant thing I've ever seen on TV. Look, I've covered combat operations for about 30 years and have been terrified much of the time. And the thing that's missing from this show is the whole idea of risk. And it does such a disservice to the men and women who do risk their lives to really earn their stripes in actual warfare, not the kind of play acting that they're showing on TV. I heard one of the characters in this show say something like, "This isn't Hollywood." Yeah, actually, it is Hollywood. It's all fake. There's no risk. And you know, it's as I say, it's demeaning to the men and women who actually are doing this stuff. And by the way, there's 80 still in Afghanistan.
Say that last sentence again, because it was a little bleep.
I say there's still 84,000 American men and women in the war zone in Afghanistan.
And Mona Lisa, your immediate take before we get into the hearts and guts of what's happening in America with these shows.
Sure. Like you, I saw the promo for the first time during the Olympics and wrote about it about a week before the premiere. And to be honest, I was completely astonished at the attention it gained, to say nothing of the call to cancel the show by the Nobel laureates and even protests outside NBC's studio. So, you know, I didn't think there was going to be much interest, mostly because the military is such a huge part of American cultural life, but its actual effects overseas, not to mention its domestic effects, are virtually ignored. So I'm encouraged at least to see some questioning of the project, especially since the series was released on the heels of an extraordinarily violent American summer. You know, the mass shooting in Colorado, the shooting at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin by a former veteran, to say nothing of 8 separate attacks on mosques in the first half of August alone. And while there have been, you know, shows like Top Gun, well, not shows, but series and films like Top Gun, Rambo, which actually gets referenced in the show, Todd Palin's compared to Rambo, American Gladiator, the first-person shooter games, I think my personal favorite is the Army Experience Store, which used to be at a recruitment center at a discount mall in Philadelphia. It's been turned into a Bally's gym now. Not to mention, you know, other shows that Mark Burnett's tried to produce similar to this one, and you know, they got canceled. But this show in particular interests me because it, you know, as an episodic television series, it creates its own world, and that world is sanitized of any trace of the actual experience of military assault. For example, you know, here in the States, the anti-war march at the NATO summit in Chicago was the largest one there, and included former combatants throwing their medals away. I mean, if you are interested in the experience of actual U.S. Army veterans, I have people in my own family who've been enlisted in the Army, then, you know, it might be worth it to get some airtime with them, and we've seen virtually none of that recently. So that's why I think the show matters, and beyond, you know, well, this is just a reality television series or stars are looking for more fame or something like that. I think the visuals and the footage of actual wars the U.S. has orchestrated are close to non-existent. And I did see David Wood at the, you know, I'm happy he's on, and I saw the HuffPost live show on Stars Are in Stripes, but I think the perspective that it reflects doesn't go far enough in discussing the role of the military in American civic life. You know, virtually no one has talked about the issue of the target end of U.S. foreign policy. You know, we're coming on the heels of the second highest number of deaths in Iraq since July. You know, the revelations months ago about horrifying desecrations of corpses in Afghanistan. Not to mention Robert Bales, who is reported to have killed 16 civilians in a massacre in Kandahar, including children. So this consequence of what I was calling realness, which is the imitation of the real, is the absence of, you know, worry, is the absence of danger, that war is just how we see, you know, the animated gaming POV shots that cameras attach to the celebrity contestants. It's just, you know, it's just how we see targets. That's really all it is.
Let's come back to some of the things that Mona Lisa just said. You laid out a great deal as to David. Let me turn first, though, to Rebecca Edelman.
Well, I have two things. One, to just kind of pick up on something that Mona Lisa was saying about, you know, this idea that if we saw more of the real footage of war, maybe that would be different. Or maybe people would feel differently about combat. I'm not sure that we know that with any kind of certainty. It's not entirely clear that people who see, you know, sort of mediated footage of war actually changed their opinion on it very much. So I don't know. I think maybe that's worth more discussion. One of the things that was really interesting to me about the show, and like pretty much everybody else, I watched about 15 minutes and that was, I had a pretty good sense of what was going on, is the fact that it really, on the one hand, it seems to partake of this sort of larger cultural shift toward militarization, right, where we see the increasing presence of, you know, sort of military motifs in popular culture, so whether it's in video games or other sorts of things. But one of the things that was what I was noticing is when I was watching the credits last night, I watched the credits, and, you know, I expected to see that there would be something like thanking the Department of Defense or thanking the Army or thanking the whoever, and there really wasn't any of that. So one of the things I think is interesting about the show is that it's this kind of autonomous, right? So it's not, you know, it's not like it's propaganda necessarily. It's not like the military is behind this and they're wanting to sort of glamorize war or make it seem really sexy or enticing. What we see instead is this real effort to make war purely entertainment, but also that this kind of project of militarization is being taken up independently by the network. I mean, we have the presence of Wesley Clark. He's kind of, it's hard to sort of pin down what he's doing here. He's become kind of a media celebrity in his own right. He has a gig, I think, on the Military History Channel or something like that. It's not, I don't know the details of how exactly he came to be associated with this. I've read some interviews with him, but I'm sure the details are kept private. But one of the things I just kind of want to think about is how it is that, you know, NBC decided that this would be entertainment. We don't, there's no indication that they were given the nudge to do it by, you know, by the military or by the government. So that kind of autonomous militarization, I think, is really interesting to me.
So when we see what reality TV does in our culture, in some ways, this is almost like the pinnacle of it for me. I mean, you, because of taking these celebrities and, you know, actually making the world feel that they're in some kind of danger. I mean, this is even things you heard, David Wood, when they, one of the commentaries on this was, you know, we could be killed. When that's crazy. I mean, nobody is going to be killed. They're going to be, take breaks, be given lunch, and cleaned up and go back and play with their helicopters again. David Wood.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, I haven't been in Afghanistan since this series began running this week, I guess. But I can imagine the folks in Afghanistan who are in danger watching this show and just hooting with laughter. It's just really absurd. But on a deeper level, I agree with what your other guests have been saying tonight about how this cheapens and glamorizes the whole idea of war. And in a way, you know, I hate to think this, but does it make people more willing to go along with the hoorah that always precedes a war? You know, I am very much aware that before the war in Afghanistan and before the war in Iraq, both launched by the United States, there was not much of a serious debate in this country about the cost of the war. And I'm not talking about dollars only. Mostly I'm talking about the human cost. Of the people we kill, of the Americans who are killed, we seem to go into war really, really easily. And I'd hate to think that this would accelerate that process.
And it does do that in some ways, though. I mean, at least I would think it might do that in some ways. I mean, Mona Lisa, and then we'll go over to Rebecca. I mean, that this is what, this is the part of what people see as the game of war. You know, I mean, it's different than when you were a kid and you're playing war than what you're seeing here, which is people that you think are your entertainment heroes as a young person playing at war. And it does make it easier in some ways to make this thing happen. When there's maybe Rebecca's looking askance, but let's go to Mary, Mona Lisa, and let Rebecca's askance become words.
Sure. Well, I wanted to just pick up on something that Rebecca had said and offer a different perspective in that, you know, whether or not this show is autonomous. And I would say that's, you know, we don't know 100%, but actually that we do know that the U.S. Army has an entertainment liaison in Los Angeles. I tried calling them today, but not operators. And the New Republic's Laura Bennett wrote an article about Stars and Stripes and quoted the chief entertainment officer, and you know, who spoke that basically the key to having the military represented on screen is that they're represented well, and that's why there's a whole entertainment liaison. You know, for shows like Army Wives, you know, she wrote that a Top Chef episode was filmed at Nellis Air Force Base in Nevada, So, you know, it's important to show that, you know, these are cool missions, is what he said. And I think, you know, I would again challenge the view that, you know, being sanitized of the visuals of war is, you know, maybe not unimportant, but doesn't have, you know, a visceral effect, you know, on American society. I remember, you know, you asked about growing up and seeing images of war. And, like, of course, everybody, you know, my brothers had G.I. Joes. I grew up with, like, American Gladiator on TV and saw, you know, night vision goggle shots of the Gulf War. That's about as much as you saw. But I've also been to Iraq. And 6 months before the invasion in 2000, I went in 2002. And I think that if, you know, if those kinds of images, and not just images, but narratives were allowed to somehow trickle into, certainly we're not bereft of, you know, access to them, there's the internet, but if they were allowed to be shown and experienced, then I do think that people would think twice, you know, once they have a face and a human story to attach to people on the target end. And that target end is actually something that I think is incredibly important, and not just overseas. You know, one of the combatants is New York Police Department officer Cortez, and I thought he was just such a stunning example. He's holding military grade weaponry, and you know he actually, I think he has on more bulletproof vest, you know, that's stronger than any of the other operatives. And we just saw over the past year, as one by one, every single Occupy camp was destroyed by the police. And, you know, and I kept track of them on my blog. I mean, most of the camps that were destroyed were actually by Democratic mayors. That bears saying. So, and in New York, too, the assaults on occupiers have been well documented. So you have someone who, you know, we're glorifying the servicemen, we're not glorifying war. But, you know, I think these glorifications and these images matter a great deal because exactly of the absence of what we don't usually get. You know, we have Chris Kyle, who's the deadliest sniper. I just ordered his book and look forward to reading it, not really. But he took part in the Battle of Fallujah. And, you know, Americans, how much of the Battle of Fallujah were we, you know, not the first operation where they went, you know, to revenge the deaths of the Z Academy mercenaries, but the second one. So how much of that were we really allowed to see? And Wesley Clark himself, I think he's absolutely, he has the charisma on screen of, you know, sort of wood chips. But he's largely known as a nice guy to Americans. I mean, he was a deeply, when I was growing up, you know, in during the Kosovo War, you know, where we discussed it in high school, you know, I remember he was really, really liked. And he's a Democratic candidate, you know, who led NATO under a Democrat in the White House. The show has come out during a Democratic presidency. And he actually sort of approached the Bush administration as an alternative. You know, he said, you know, I support the invasion of Afghanistan, not the invasion of Iraq, and so on. So he saw himself as an interventionist, as separate from the Bush administration.
So,
and yet, you know, we don't really get to talk about the actual NATO bombing campaigns of this four-star general, right? Thousands, hundreds at least, hundreds of civilians, the bombing of the Chinese embassy. We don't really get to talk about that. We just see him as this guy in a windbreaker. And I think those absences are something that I think we should be, you know, more critical of.
Well, I mean, let's take that package you just put together. I'm going to come back and take for this brief break and hear Rebecca's take. But I have some very specific questions from all the things the three of you have just said. And when I hear from listeners of 410-319-8888, did you see Stars Are and Stripes? You thought about entertainment, war is entertainment. 410-319-8888. Come back to your calls and your thoughts and our guests. Stay with us.
Brent has been in live combat before. And just to watch him manage the weapon and just how natural it is for him, the wow factor was in full effect.
Yeah, there's one more on the left. It went.
Transformers disabled. Move out.
That, again, a clip from the TV show that we're talking about here this evening. Stars Earn Stripes, as we talk with David Wood, senior military correspondent for the Huffington Post, Pulitzer Prize winner, Mariam Mona Lisa Garavi, who is a writer, poet, filmmaker, doctoral candidate in comparative lit and film and visual studies at Harvard University. Dr. Rebecca Edelman, who is professor of media and communications studies at UMBC here in Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Get to those calls coming in. But let's come back. You're about to pick up on something, and I'll come back to what I was thinking after hearing that clip.
Well, I was just, again, we're sort of talking about this question of the real and what might be missing from these shows. During the break, Mark and I were talking about what happened during Vietnam when, people were seeing, people talk a lot about how that was the first time they actually saw people bleed in color, right? And so there's a lot of interesting media history scholarship about, like, the redness of the blood, right? Because otherwise it just would have been, sort of black and white and sort of distant, but to give people an actual visceral experience of combat, and that perhaps seeing things like that did change their assessment of the war. So I want to kind of set, hold that intention with a possibility that at this point, we just can't know for sure that if the average person sitting at home watching TV sees graphic images of deaths of people who have already been framed as enemies or already been sort of positioned as less than human, whose deaths are already understood to be kind of less than grievable or less than significant, if that automatically would sort of change their view of the war, incite them to some kind of sympathy or any kind of opposition. So I think it's hard to know, but I guess the sort of takeaway, this sort of short answer here, is that we know that audiences respond to media texts in very different and often contradictory ways. So I think it's important to keep that in mind, even as we want to be critical of the possibility that a show like Stars and Stripes glorifies war, that people who are watching might have a whole sort of range of different responses to it that we can't always predict or know in advance. And it seems like my sense from at least kind of reading some of the popular reactions today is that the response to the show has been sort of lukewarm. The ratings were poor, and the some of the other information, nobody's really over the moon about this.
Nobody's over the moon about this particular, I think, yeah. That is true. And, yeah. I think it probably will fall on its face over the next few weeks, maybe the next few months,
yeah.
at the outside. But I think that to kind of wrestle with maybe this intersection of entertainment and war. Mm-hmm. I mean, you hear these pieces, it's like going to the movies, you hear this music blaring. Granted that some of the guys, the women I met coming back from Afghanistan, say they do play some music in their heads while they're out. But that's not the same thing. And it's but you hear this music blaring, this Hollywood movie that are out there, and also the idea of the video games that have taken over the entire young generation and much of the young generation in their lives. Much of it built around war and violence, and this new way we fight war. I mean, there's an intersection here between war and entertainment that is kind of frightening on some levels. And I think that it frightens most people I know who've been through war, but it also frightens just us just in terms of thinking about where our society is headed when this becomes how we view war.
Right, which I think is kind of part of what complicates the idea that, if we saw footage of actual casualties, they would really move us because we're so trained to think about war as a mediated phenomenon, right? So that even if we see something on the news of the consequences of violence, it doesn't even seem real, even if it's framed as such, right? Because we're so used to seeing this as a, something to be consumed for entertainment or something to be sort of... It seems sort of either less than real or hyper-real in its way, but it's hard to get a kind of purchase on it.
We might think, Mark, about why it is that nobody has done a reality show on real combat veterans. I think is a great idea, and I'd love to be involved in something like that.
What does that mean to you? How do you when you think of that, what does that mean?
Well, look, there are lots and lots of... young Americans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who have incredible stories to tell, very, very dramatic stories, stories of sacrifice and survival and really compelling stories, real, actual stories. But nobody's going to make a reality show about them. And, thinking about why this is, it's pretty clear to me that fake war is much more exciting than real war, And so, you know, we're probably not ever going to be rid of stuff like this. But I do hope that that shows like this will prompt some questioning, as you're doing on this show, about, you know, what is the nature of war? What is really war really like? I think that most Americans know deep down that war is awful. It's dirty. It's destructive. It's, you know, there's, except for individual acts of nobility, there's nothing much good about war. And I think people know that. But still, you know, I think this show will have an insidious effect of enabling people not to think too deeply about war. And we do need to think more deeply about it. Now, the other thing that struck me about this show is there's no enemy. There's no, they're not shooting at anybody.
Right, right.
And that's a real telling point about the show, because that's the whole thing about war. It's about killing people. And we like to not think about that. And we like to pretend to ourselves that that's not really what we're doing. We're servicing targets, or we're practicing counterinsurgency. And there are all these nice names for what actually is pure and simple killing. And, you know, because this show leaves out that part of it, it really sanitizes war in a way that, the Nobel laureates who wrote the letter protesting this, this show outlined really nicely.
I thought they did too. Mona Lisa?
Yeah, just to pick up on what David said, I think one of the, if I remember correctly, one of the celebrities says during the first episode that this is giving us our freedom, or the army is giving us our freedom to play these games. And, you know, it brings on the question, if you really kind of, you know, probe their dramatic sound bites, what freedom is it giving you? Is it giving you freedom, or is it conferring kind of some kind of freedom to be entertained? And never mind, you know, how cheapened the word freedom is there. But to you know, I agree. I think, you know, if you act, I actually subjected myself to all of it, both the two-hour premiere last night. I plan to watch every single episode, you know, for my own documentation. I want to see the simulated reality play out. And the missions themselves are patched together as if you took various parts of, you know, U.S. wars, NATO invasions, and kind of stitched them together. And when I described this to one of my friends, he said it was like the Disney ride effect. Like, you can just go from one end of Epcot Center to another. And, you know, you watch Leila Ali, who your listeners will probably recall, her father went to jail for refusing to serve in the Vietnam War.
Right.
Break down a door, and then another contestant, you know, blows up a box filled with ammunition, and so on and so on. And, you know, I think what David said, you know, is absolutely right. You don't really, you're not asked to think hard in this show about, well, whose door? You know, blowing up the ammunition where? I mean, the breaking down of doors, and, you know, that just, to me, that's such an automatic, you know, that's, you know, 2003 Bush administration, Iraq, I mean, or, you know, 2004, and so on and so on. So they're called missions on the show, but you don't really get to see, well, who, you know, what then, are they missionaries? You know, what's the, do we have a civilian point of view on these assaults? They're just sort of basically simulating a reality for the celebrities to compete to do these enemy-less assaults and, you know, gain points by them. So that quantification of, you know, the Disney ride effect is a really kind of, I would say it's fairly novel, actually. I mean, you know, it's a competition, it's a game show, it's a reality series, but there's something kind of novel about the way it almost, for, you know, I mean, I hope some, you know, people remember, but it sort of asks you not to think. It asks you not to think about Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, and every single kind of, you know, Libya, every mm-hmm. Everything in between.
At the same time, I think that the show is also, seems to me, kind of self-aware of its own kind of constructedness. So, I mean, you called it the Disneyland effect, and I think that's really, it's a really great comparison. And it's interesting that a lot of the shots of their missions, visually, they look a lot more like movies than they do like combat, right? So their referent isn't like actual war. Their referent is already this sort of representation of warfare. So I think that's a really excellent point. At the same time, I get the sense from watching it that the show has to work really hard to make these claims about its seriousness, about its relevance. So every single cutaway shot that you have with these celebrities, they're repeating basically the same line over and over again about how this really makes me appreciate what our troops are doing, or this is about freedom, or this is, you know, this really reminds me about how significant war is. And so it's almost like the show is sort of protesting too much, like it has to work too hard to assert that this is some kind of socially meaningful or politically meaningful tribute to the people that actually fight these wars.
So let me open the phone so I guess more listeners in to hear what their thoughts are. 410-319-8888. As we look at Stars and Stripes, you just heard Dr. Rebecca Edelman. Mona Lisa Garavi is with us from Harvard University. David Wood, senior military correspondent for the Huffington Post. 410-319-8888. Join us on Facebook or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And Michael in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
I have been in a number of wars, and nothing on TV, movies, or anything that people can ever make it, can no one can ever understand it. You can put it behind you, but you can never get over it. And they say war is hell. I've never been to hell, but I've been to war. And I can't possibly think the hell could be any worse than being in some place where your buddies get their head blown out, blown off while you're 17 years old, while it's right next to you. Once again, I put it behind me, but I'll never, ever get over it. And I'm interested in hearing more what you have to say. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. David?
Well, thank you for your service. And,
thank you.
I'm glad you called in with a little, to shed a little reality on this show. What this gentleman is talking about is the reality of war, and not the kind of stuff we're seeing on this so-called reality show. Again, I think it's a disservice. Even the name of this show, Stars Earn Their Stripes, you know, for people who volunteer to serve in the military, actually to earn their stripes, it's hard, it's difficult, it's dangerous, it's dirty, it's cold, it's exhausting, and they go through it, really push hard, and eventually they earn their stripes, and it's a big deal. So doing it on TV is, as I say, it's just repugnant.
Let's get another caller in here. We'll come back. 410-319-8888. Tyree, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for the show. I'm following you where whatever station you go to. I'm glad to be able to hear you tonight.
Thank you.
And you know, I signed the online petition protesting this TV show, and which went to NBC. I'm not surprised that NBC thought of something so sick and twisted. I mean, they make a lot. Jay Leno makes a lot of jokes about how stupid the execs are there. So, I mean, I will not subject myself to trying to watch it again. I did try to watch it, and I don't think I can take any more of that. But I wanted to say, one of your guests said something that really prompted me to call in, something about separating the personal costs from the social costs, or maybe I misheard him. But, you know, I think the monetary costs, I think that's what he said, from the personal costs, the monetary costs have cost us dearly as a country. And this year, I think in 2013, I read online, we're going to pay $629 billion to the Pentagon. And that's money that we could be spending on education, healthcare, infrastructure. You just had some steel workers on talking about how the steel industry has been decimated. We sorely need to invest our money here and not, you know, giving it to the Pentagon for, I mean, you can look up how many crazy projects they have going on. And my last point is, there was a very weird, I thought, a weird Pew study recently. You could look this up as well, where the members of the military were more in favor of these wars than any of the rest of society. There was a larger proportion of the people, the volunteer military, that was in favor of the wars that were, whatever that you call these things, military interventions or whatever they are, and that's never happened before. That's never happened before. I mean, I could not imagine asking World War II veterans if they wanted to be there, you know, more than society needed them to be there. But I mean, you know, please, maybe that would be something to look into. Why is the military so in favor of continuing this stuff when, you know, surely they're hurting as well. Although I will say, I see a lot of money. I'm here in Baltimore. I see all the money in D.C. that the defense industry has pumped into this place, and they're kind of, they're well off. And
you raise a really good point.
David Wood, go ahead.
Let me just jump in here.
Please do.
If you recall, back in 1973, we as a country decided we didn't want to take part in wars anymore. We didn't want to send our kids. We didn't want to go. We're going to hire a professional military, and that's what we did. So end of the draft in 1973, and from then on we've had what we call an all-volunteer military, but it's a professional military, and war is what they do. And, without making any apologies for them at all, and I happen to agree more with you than not on the whole question of defense spending and everything else. But the fact is we have a professional military. They're good at what they do. They're proud of what they do. They like doing what they do. So it's no surprise to me, and I'm not aware of this particular Pew poll.
I'm not either. Yeah, I didn't see that one.
But it would be no surprise to me to learn that people in the military think they're doing a good job and want to keep doing it.
And Tabea, thanks for the call. And Mona Lisa, I'm going to pick up on this, what David was saying and what our caller Tyree was saying. I mean, and what you were saying earlier. I mean, this is something that I think that this is maybe not directly about the program, but it affects this program that the launching this reality TV Stars Earn Stripes, is that I also come from that era of the Vietnam War, where you were drafted into the Army if you weren't in college and had a deferment. So that, and in many ways, and my dad fought in World War II. My mom was in World War II as an ambulance driver, pulling people out of the rubble in Britain. So came up in that world, And in many ways, there was a great democratizer because everybody would be affected by a war on some level if your country decided to go. But here we're in a different place. We're in a place where we have an all-volunteer army now, which you were talking about earlier in terms of what you sought Occupy, which in many ways was the militarization of the police, this kind of glorification that we see on shows like this that make it a game, the video games we play, where war has come to with drones. Not there are a lot of men and women on the ground. There are. But the war that we're seeing. And there's a confluence of things here that I think that should make us, Mona Lisa, begin to think about who we are, where we're going, the role that entertainment plays in all this, and the kind of conversation we need to have with ourselves as Americans about where we're going.
Yeah, I'm interested in that confluence, too. And I think your caller is right to call attention to, the economic aspect. Obviously, I don't think the economy exists in some kind of protected vacuum, much the opposite. And the Defense Department is, the world's most, the world's number one employer or something, top three employers in the world. So, yeah, I mean, you do see, my generation doesn't have a ready memory of the 60s. And this kind of a response to, a mass response, a mass anti-war response is not something that I personally have seen in the past decade. I haven't seen a lot of anti-war marches in the past decade, actually. So I think the military is, I can't speak for people who enlist, obviously, but, speaking from the position of my own family and family members in small towns in the South, enlist because there, frankly, there aren't any other jobs. And it's seen as a secure harbor, a place that you're kind of, at least at the beginning, for the most part, to say nothing of the trauma after and the physical and emotional effects after, you're sort of taken care of. It's kind of ironic that we should have this kind of small socialism within the military. But I think what the military is in general, and this might, I don't know if this will upset your military correspondent, David Wood, but I think it's worth talking about that it's a hierarchical and authoritative structure. And it's there with a very, at least meant to, since our military's origins are with the Roman Empire, it's meant to have a very specific purpose in society. And instead, it's come to have this such a general, such a normalizing presence in our society. So I think in some ways, as astounded as I was to see this show, it makes a lot of sense because it's also reached our entertainment valve, and the entertainment valve of the past decade has been reality TV, arguably.
So we have literally just about a minute left before we have to break for another program coming in to take over the studio. David, very quickly, if you give us 30 seconds response, what Mona Lisa said, and the same with Rebecca.
Well, again, I think, you know, she raises a couple of really good points, and I hope that this show does engender kind of discussion we're having here. I think it's really, really important. You know, I have a lot of good friends in the military. I happen to come from an anti-war background myself, personally. I was a conscientious objector during the Vietnam War and became a war correspondent. But all these issues need to be aired, and I think we do need to rethink this whole idea of having a professional military, because it does distance American society from the military and from what they're doing. And you know, here you see the extreme example of that, where we have a reality show about war with no victims.
So we really have like 10 seconds left. I'm terribly sorry, Rebecca.
Well, no, that's fine. If there is a sort of silver lining to be found in all this, it may well be that something, a show like Stars and Stripes, will kind of, I hesitate to use the metaphor, sort of fall on its own sword, but by because it's so kind of obviously vacuous, right? Everybody knows reality TV is vacuous, and this is so obviously constructed that it might kind of encourage that sort of discussion that it seems like we're all wanting to have about what's the difference between the reality and the representation of war.
I want to thank Rebecca Edelman, Professor of Media and Communication Studies at UMBC, David Wood, Senior Military Correspondent for Huffington Post, for some great work, Mona Lisa Garavi, writer, poet, filmmaker, doctoral candidate of comparative lit and film studies, film and visual studies at Harvard, for joining us. It's been a great discussion. Thank you three so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you all. And on the way out of here, I want to remind you that tomorrow we will be pre-recorded, because we want to invite you, whether we're talking about water quality, environment, food security, traffic congestion, development in Baltimore County affects Baltimore City and our entire region. If you're interested in these issues, please join us tomorrow night, August 22nd, 7 p.m., for a town hall meeting on land use planning in Baltimore County. Focusing on Northern Baltimore County, it affects us all. I'll be moderating a panel for the event, sponsored by the North County Preservation. It will be held at the Baltimore County Center for Maryland Agriculture, 1114 Shawan Road, Hunt Valley. For information, go to northcountypreservation.org and join us here tomorrow night with your thoughts and ideas. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our senior producer is Justin Levy. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Gunnery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineer, the same, Jamara Jones, is our engineer tonight. Excuse me. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast, past shows, find information about our guests and their work, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. Stay tuned now for Wealthy Lifestyle Radio with Deborah Owens, and for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.